Hello and welcome to Pinken.com Norwich City podcast number 335, where there may even be a bit of positivity. On the way, a fine 1-0 win over Middlesbrough. Is Timo Pukki going to win the Ballon d'Or? A red card that wasn't a red card. Wes is a baggie, and a look ahead to this week's City games at Reading and QPR. David Freezer here in the presenter's chair this week, and joining us at Archon Towers we have our chief Canaries correspondent Paddy Davitt and Archon's invention and data manager, apparently, but our very own Peter Raven. How are we doing, chaps?
Very well, thank you, Dave.
Well, David. Very impressive link, that, my friend.
You know, we try, but it's all a little bit easier on the back of a win, isn't it? And I guess that's the... That's going to be the general feeling of today's pod. Just before we get stuck into part one, remember you can get in touch with us all here, share your thoughts and set the agenda. Just send us an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk, or you know where we all are on social media, and you can find all the full details of the podcast at pinken.com/podcast. So on with part one, and that was the week that was, and we've got to kick off with the Borough game. Both you chaps were there, Pete. How did it feel in the stands? It felt from the press box. It felt like a big day in, or potentially a big day in this season.
Yeah, I mean, had you asked even the most optimistic Norwich fan before the game what the result was going to be, a few would have said a Norwich win. The way that both teams have been playing, I think. Is that the only opening game that Middlesbrough last conceded a goal?
Opening day, yeah. They went 2-0 down at Millwall and then 5 clean sheets after.
Yeah, and exactly, we're not firing all cylinders, are we? I mean, the atmosphere certainly picked up after we scored. I thought it was a little bit flat the first half, but yeah, like you say, in the stands, it was. And then when 6 minutes came up, everyone's like, well, where they got that from? And it was just, everyone's looking at their watches from then on. It's not been like that for a while, but it's... Yeah, unexpected. A nice surprise.
But that tension and a little bit of feistiness to the game perhaps helped, didn't it? Because, as Daniel said after the game, the crowd were needed. The players needed them. You could see it from Tim Krull and Zimmerman. They were whipping the crowd up, really trying to get them involved, weren't they?
Apparently, I saw someone on social that said that's what Tim Krull was doing in the second half. He was actually physically turning to the river end, I think, and urging that support.
After Closer was sort of sent off, he turned around and almost celebrated.
Did he? Good lad. Yeah, I mean, talking about the atmosphere here, but it was just a day where, and very rare we've had it this season, certainly, and probably for since most of the calendar year, where everything seemed to go right. You know, Farker's selections heavily questioned before the game, when it's Steeperman in, Rhodes out. Maybe even Zimmerman getting a nod ahead of Godfrey to replace Hanley, but literally could not fault his selections. The template, the tactical template he set them out with, the youthful sort of energy just down the flanks, Leitner in a withdrawn role, everything worked perfectly. After maybe Borough had the first 10 minutes or so, then they just literally, I mean, it should have, I think I wrote today, 1-0 should have been more emphatic than that. It certainly felt like that in the game, despite, as you rightly say there, the last 10 minutes, because it was only 1-0, it did get a little bit tense. And the crowd fed off that, as Pete says. You know, that's all they want ultimately, isn't it? They want to turn up every other Saturday and have a team who go for it and pin teams on the back foot and try to score goals and entertain. Very simple formula. Won't always work. Won't always, as we saw against Leeds, come off. But I think more often than not, if you polled most Norwich fans and they were going to get that type of approach every other home game, they'd take it.
Yeah, I think it was a good day for Daniel Farker in that he almost made Tony Pulis look like a bit of a dinosaur, didn't he? In that it was like, we're going to play proper football, we're going to try and win this in the right way, because we know that you're going to set up defensively, you're going to set up and try and kill the game, try and nick it 1-0. So do you think maybe a little bit of love has come back for Daniel on the back of Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, especially with that team selection beforehand, he thought, Middlesbrough have got some big lads at the back. You'd expect Rhodes to be up there getting in amongst it, not Pukki. Steeperman as well, surprised to see him in. And we thought maybe they'd go five at the back with Godfrey and Zimmerman and Closer. But no, he got it spot on, didn't he? It's like you say, it's a Pulis side is never attractive one to watch, but he got it, yeah, got everything right.
he hasn't got a great record at Carrow Road over the years, really, because he quite often comes and he appreciates that Carrow Road can be a place when it gets going, like it did on Saturday, where it's difficult to win. But of course, main man, yet again, we can't stop talking about him at the moment, Teemu Pukki. As he sort of told me afterwards, I checked on the pronunciation, and he said, technically in Finnish, Teemu Pukki, but he's not that worried. As long as he keeps scoring goals, I don't think anyone really cares. But yeah,
some haircut he's gone for.
Yeah, sharp haircut. Three 1-0 wins, and he scored the winner in all three, including those two games with Finland, which was Hungary and Estonia in the Nations League. I mean, the guy is literally on fire at the moment, isn't he?
6 in 10, club and country, yeah, prolific. My only negative is Oliveira did this at the start of last season. We know how that panned out, but I'm not trying to draw beyond that. We're not going to draw any more parallels between, I don't think we'll be seeing shirts getting ripped off by this lad, but yeah, he couldn't really, in fact, he's over exceeding, isn't he? Because he was one of the new intake, and you would have thought naturally, particularly coming from a league, although he had played obviously in Britain at Celtic for a period, but that adaptation period, which we've seen with others, you know, Srebeni is a very good example, another striker coming in from continental Europe, and he hasn't really grasped it. This guy's a bit older, a bit more streetwise, clearly, but again, I've touched on this earlier in the season, he doesn't look like a footballer. You wouldn't say this guy is a very polished operator, but he certainly knows where the goal is, and in the box he's deadly at the minute, and you just hope, as I say, that he's the sort of lad where he can maintain this level of productivity through the season. We don't get a guy who's basically going to be very good in patches, but we might have to look for alternatives, because if he can score goals and they remain as resolute as they were at the back on Saturday, then particularly with the next few games coming up, it could be a very fertile period for Norwich. Yeah,
yeah. Again, this is a good point for Daniel Farker, isn't it? He didn't go with Rhodes, avoided that aerial battle, and Pukki being up top and making the intelligent runs that he does almost fitted better with the midfield. That passing style and the possession style, and Steepman and Leitner seem to have a good connection as well, and it worked. You know, Pukki, actually, I hadn't noticed this as much in real time, but looking back at the replay, the touch to control the ball to allow himself to get the shot away for the goal was really good. So he's really grown in popularity, isn't he, Pete?
Also, I don't know if this was just because of Borough had a sluggish back four. The pace on him as well, I hadn't noticed. I guess in previous games when he's been playing behind Rhodes, but and then on Saturday he got a chance to really see it. He's a lot quicker than I thought he was. Yeah. But and his link-up by Buendia as well. Really intelligent, but it'd be hard for Rhodes to get back in, though.
Mm. Well, speaking to him afterwards, he did say that he's developed his game a lot since he was at Celtic. Obviously, he's got 28 now, and that was 4 or 5 years ago he's at Celtic, so he's had a really good spell in Denmark with Brøndby ever since then, and I think Norwich are perhaps, you know, seeing the rewards of that spell. Sort of the one of the other big talking points of the game was the Tim Closer sort of red card that wasn't a red card, and certainly confused us initially in the press box, didn't it, Pat? But once things settled down, it was fairly straightforward, wasn't it, that it was an offside decision from the linesman, which basically ruled out what would have been a second yellow card for Closer, but we didn't realise Closer had been booked the first time. A lot of people in the stands seem to have thought that yellow card just after Norwich's goal was for Moritz Leitner.
Well, it was recorded as that by the press association at the ground, and it's from there that the stats flow out on whatever apps you're then looking at, the BBC or whoever. So they inaccurately reported it as Leitner. Yeah, I mean, it came straight after the goal, so I think certainly in my experience, my own experience, I was literally still head down in the laptop, looked up, and the free kick had been awarded, which then Downing smacked into the wall. Funny enough, it was Closer who then completed the clearance. But so yeah, obviously then looking at that point of the game, it looked like Leitner had got it, so that's why the confusion reigned, because it then thereafter Closer gets what we thought was his first yellow, and then a red. You think, well, what's going on there? I mean, you say straightforward, but fair play to that assistant referee, because yeah, it wasn't. He was 3 yards the other side. That was quite a tight call, that looked to me. So to call it and then keep your flag up and then overrule effectively your referee, he might be a good shout for the hero of the week, I think. But because you could just see a scenario where it was that tight that he let it run on, then close against ends up getting his second yellow card. They're down to 10 men, and then inevitably Borough would have probably fancied their chances of certainly getting something out of the game. So on small things like that, you're saying earlier, right at the start, potentially a pivotal game for Norwich in terms of their growth and development. And you can say within this game, this pivotal game, that one moment there, a decision that wasn't actually in their grasp, but I mean, it was the correct decision, fine, but he still has to make it. And the fact that it's gone Norwich's way, who knows what that unleashes.
Yeah, whether it would have happened like that if Norwich were the away team and that was at the Riverside, I'm not quite so sure. But they got it right, so fair play to them. Only other thing I really want to touch on from the game at this point, Tim Krul, second clean sheet, and I'd say probably the best performance we've seen from him so far. Fine save from Johnny Howson in the first half. Do you think maybe those early worries have been shed a little bit by that performance?
Yeah, you'd like to think that. What's he out for, two seasons? He's now got six or seven games under his belt. The rust is coming off and match fitness is there for as much as it can be for a goalkeeper. Clean sheet will do him the world of good. Mm. It wasn't like he had nothing to do. There's one or two decent saves there. And I thought he was a bit better with balls coming into the box as well. You know, in the past where he sort of flapped them or punched them straight to an opposition play. He looks a bit more confident in that. And also the first half, he saw a lot of the ball, didn't he? It kept on getting played backwards, as it always does. So, yeah, hopefully that's the first, well, not the first, but the second of many clean sheets. Can only do him the world of good after Saturday. And it's after he's had one or two mistakes, hasn't he? And it's never going to be easy following Angus Gunner. I don't think he made any, did he? So, and also being a Norwich boy. But he's got the experience and, yeah, the worries are off at the moment.
Yeah, I look back on when he was a Newcastle keeper and he was such a big character, so to see him throwing his arms around, getting the crowd into things was great to see, because he is a big character. But I think as with the vast majority of the squad, it's about building confidence from this point onwards. Let's move on to the gongs of the week then. And Pad, you've made your suggestion for potential hero of the week.
Well, I'm not going to go with him, Dave, but yeah, it's certainly an honourable mention for the assistant.
I'm not sure which one it was, unfortunately, off the top of my head. But yeah, the Duncan Forbes hero of the week. I mean, you can't really look too far beyond Timo Pukki, can you?
Well, you can't really, but you know, in the interests of some sort of variety, I'm going to go with Mr. Stieperman, because I've not seen that performance from that man in his time in Norwich. And in his defence, he might say, well, you know, play me in that position, because I don't think I've seen. He might have occasionally slotted or moved from a left sided position into the centre during a game, but for Farker to hang his hat and say this guy is effectively going to be the number 10, the chief support to Pukki, I hadn't seen that at all. But what a performance he delivered. Probably not given Pukki scored and Lightning was good and the lads on the wide flanks, maybe not top billing, but don't underestimate his importance in terms of what he did with the ball, and also without, you know, because he is a big unit. So just to add that bit of bite alongside Tete, it just, as we said right at the outset, everything seemed to work, and that probably was Farker's biggest call of the day, and Stieperman repaid him. So, you know, for me, he would definitely be up there for honourable hero of the week.
Yeah, I like that he's a bit solid. He's you know, he can look after the ball, and I thought it worked quite nicely. Any other nominations, Pete?
I thought Max Aaron's, like, the way he played, you forget how young the lad is. But also the Middlesbrough fan after the game on video was amazing.
AJT apparently is called. Apparently he has history.
Imagine sitting next to him all the way back to Middlesbrough. Bloody hell.
Yes, for those who haven't seen it, head over to pinkin.com. There's a, as there tends to be nowadays, there is Borough Fan TV, and they interviewed a chap outside the South Stand after the game, and he had an almighty rant and basically said he hated Norwich, everything to do with the club, the fans, even the Holiday Inn next to the away end got flack. So,
what's the problem with that?
Who knows? But he was a very fired up young man who apparently has history of just going on almighty rants, but our web figures certainly enjoyed it, so thank you very much, Mr. AJT, whoever you are. Second gong, Kevin Muscat, villain of the week. Now, I'm going to say this just to antagonise you, Pete. Where's Houlihan?
Stand back.
Why is he a villain?
He's joined another championship club. How dare he?
He's joined a team that was, what, established in the Premier League and is looking to go straight back. It's where he belongs. He's not going to play, is he?
You wouldn't have thought so. But, I mean, he's got a deal until January with the potential to extend, so he could still face Norwich this season.
He's got to earn a living, so nothing wrong with that. It's blue and white. It looks a bit weird.
Yes.
But it's what it is. I thought he might have gone to League One, but Championship still commands a fair wage, doesn't he, wherever he's going to go. And like you say, see what he does till January, but I can't imagine there'll be too many starts there.
No.
Well, I just think with that, that's clearly with a view from Wes's point of view, is gets him to a point where he can tick over, train regularly, get his fitness levels up, and then I think you're looking at the A-League and the MLS for next season. That kicks in sort of March, February time. So I could conceivably see a scenario where he literally just gets himself into almost a pre-season mode. As you say, I can't see him maybe 10 or 15 minutes in games where they're on the front foot of the Hawthorns, or if they're struggling to break down a team at the Hawthorns. But we saw it here last season. You know, his powers had waned, and he certainly wasn't probably capable of playing too often from the start. So I don't see how that changes at West Brom. But good luck to him. Yeah, him and his agent have got themselves a good move there.
They have indeed. The villain of the week passing along the back of defence. Closer and Zimmerman were guilty of it in the first half, and the crowd let them know, didn't they? Because Borough weren't pushing onto them. They weren't closing them down. There was no need to be knocking it around at the back. That's not how football works, really. And they did respond. They did cut it out, didn't they?
He's done this a lot now, Closer, and I reckon it's on purpose. When he collects a ball from the keeper in the area, is that on? Because he can't be that stupid that he doesn't
to give away a free kick.
Well, to make the goalkeeper take it again. Yeah. He's done it so many times. He obviously knows the rule, but I don't understand why they're doing it. I guess players aren't in a position, but he seems to do it a hell of a lot.
Yeah, it's almost like... I'm with you now. Krull takes the kick, Closer is purposely inside the penalty area, and then the referee says, no, you've got to take that again.
Yeah.
And he does it when they're under pressure, doesn't he? So they have done it several times. It's a little bit sort of loophole-ish, isn't it?
It is. So at some point, they're going to start getting the free kick the other way, then they'll stop doing it. But, I mean, they're passing across the back. That's what Farkas Norwich does, isn't it? You've got to get used to it. And just, like you say, Middlesbrough weren't pushing, so there's no... The crowd are always going to... You're always going to get the man behind your hand, just get it forward.
Yeah.
But that's not the way we play.
Well, not against them. I mean, as he said it again pre-match and post-match, you know, they had a team of basketball players. So launching the ball aerially to Buendia or Hernandez, it's not the percentage play. But as always with Farkas teams, it's the balance, isn't it? And to me, the balance was right in terms of, there was a bit of that. But I think overwhelmingly, they were positive. They were on the front foot. They were progressive in their passing. And I think maybe just the early stages of the game, they're trying to get a foothold. And obviously what they open there with that lateral passing at the back is that the likes of a Borough actually commit men, come out of their press, and then there's spaces if they can play through them. But, again, it sort of flows into this debate we had last season too often at Carrow, the patience factor. And when they get it wrong and they're doing that almost literally painting by numbers and they're not going anywhere. To be fair, we did see a bit of that against Preston, didn't we, midweek down here this season. Then it goes too far the other way, and then the punters do voice their displeasure. But I thought overall on Saturday, I don't think that was probably wrong. I think in terms of the lateral passing element, anyway. But it's just getting the balance right, and that's where an experienced player like Closer must realise that play with the game that you're in, rather than just for 20 minutes we've been told to do this. You know, if it allows it, and he can step out and do it.
Well, I'm going to make Wes our muscat of the week just to annoy Pete. So we'll move on to the Simeon Jackson moment of the week. And, I mean, Pucky's goal is obviously up there, but I think just the final whistle was a real moment. You know, it was one where everyone had to hang on in there and bite their fingernails, like you say, after 6 minutes of injury time. And then you've got all the players going around the pitch. It felt like a big moment, but... To counter that, it's only a big moment if they kick on from here, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that at the final whistle, the amount of people in the Barclay that stayed behind to applaud the team, not just the first couple of players, but a lot of them. Does Farke usually come on the pitch at the end?
Not always, I don't think.
I only noticed that because the man was wearing a parka in 20-degree heat.
Yeah.
But, that was different. And like you say, it's only a turning point if they now kick on rather than going back to losing a couple, win one there and repeat. But I guess also for me, moment of the week is that red card getting turned around, because it's Closer suspended and Hanley's injured. He's then got to go with Godfrey and Zimmerman at the back.
Yeah.
So it's not just doesn't just affect that game. I mean, I was always told that the referee and assistant talk to each other and have various gadgets anyway, so you thought he would have seen it straight away. But
they're certainly mic'd up, aren't they? Yeah. And I think linesmen are told not to necessarily put their flag up straight away for things to try and not undermine the referee, aren't they? Mm. But at least they got that right. But yeah, that was a big moment, because suspension for closer would have set up a serious situation, wouldn't it, Pad?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's exactly the one I was going to go for, yeah, for those reasons. Repeating myself, but not only in the game, what it meant in the game in terms of winning that game, what it would have meant if closer gets sent off, given the injury issues they've got around the place, and just, you know, everything Pete's just talked about there at the final whistle that you've talked about, Dave, wouldn't have happened if they'd have drawn the game, or heaven forbid ended up conceding two because they're down to 10 men. There's more gnashing and wailing of teeth, and then it's, oh my god, we've got to go to Reading midweek, we've got QPR at the weekend, Wigan, where are they going to be, who's going to be below them apart from Ipswich come the next international break. Now it's, everything's positive, and it's not all triggered back from that one bizarre episode, but you know, on decisions can events turn.
Okay, I think that'll do for part one. We'll be back with you in just a sec. Right, let's crack on with part two. And just a quick reminder, if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us on thepinken@archon.co.uk or find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you want to let us, if you want to give us a review on iTunes, that would be very much appreciated as well. Or if you're from a business and you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, do get in touch with us as well, thepinken@archon.co.uk. A few other issues that I just wanted to cover as well, just to take a bit of a backward step. We did mention it slightly, Grant Hanley, of course, out for a minimum 6 weeks. Looks like that could be something in the region of 10 games with a quad injury, which is a big blow. But we did see him having a look in our pictures, Pad. He was sat behind the dugout, very much part of things still. So that's good to see, isn't it?
Good spot there. Yeah, well, I mean, he's the captain, isn't he? So why wouldn't he? You know, I'm sure he was in the changing room before the game, half-time, after the game, because he wants to feel part of it. And there'll be nobody more disappointed than that guy. Given that, you know, injury disrupted pre-season, did by Farker's admission had struggled to get that level of consistency at the start of the season, but then Ipswich was like the great leap forward. He was excellent that day, not only in his own personal performance and the bravery he showed, but the leadership, given that he ended the game with Godfrey, Aarons, Lewis, and then for him to be ruled out and for it to be a lengthy one, which probably for me underlines what a massive result that was on Saturday against Borough. But over the piece, of course, you'd want him in the team, but give him his due. I thought Zimmerman was strong, because he had to be, because Asamoah Longa was giving it the old WWF at times. So, you know, he stood up to that, and he'll need to over the piece. But funnily enough, I did have a brief chat with Stuart Webber there on a Friday afternoon at the training ground, and he made the point that, and apparently the stats do back this up, that last season's better periods were the two of Closer and Zimmerman.
Really?
Yeah, by all accounts, at centre back. So if they can reunite to that degree, then, and then you've got the youthful exuberance of Lewis and Aarons with an improving Krul, then it might not be quite the disaster we felt it all was on Friday afternoon when Farker delivered the news on Hanley. But yeah, certainly you want him back sooner rather than later. Yeah.
Jamal and Max will have to learn German then, so that they can secret language their way past the attacks of other teams. But yeah, Zimmerman, what do you make of his performance, Pete, overall? There's a few dodgy moments, weren't there? But overall?
Yeah, there's always one or two with him, isn't it? That makes it a bit more exciting. I didn't realise, Paddy's pulled that out, that that's our best tier in terms of performances. You would have fought Hanley all day long. I mean, there's a reason he's captain. He's a big player on the pitch, but I imagine he's a big voice in the dressing room as well. I mean, had we gone to Ipswich with Zimmerman and Closer, they would have been bullied, especially by Walters. Yeah. But you needed someone like Hanley in there. But no, it is pleased for lad, because you know, you can tell he loves playing here and he just loves having the chance, and he realises what an opportunity is for him. And you saw at the end of Closer and the embrace and the kiss. So yeah, I think he sort of got a bit of a figure there, haven't they?
Pete, you were paying a lot of attention here at the final whistle, mate.
I was. I've just
you were taking it all in, mate.
Yeah, I wasn't at the Preston game, so that's my first win of the season. So I was milking it.
We need someone to, because we got our heads in a laptop, haven't we?
Pete's the final whistle correspondent,
your post-match pundit.
Yeah, it's actually, that's something that I try to make sure after goals, actually, because obviously the nature of our job. Straight away, we're in heads and laptops, we're on Twitter, you know, talking about the goal. I always try and
stop myself from doing it for just 5-10 seconds to make sure you can take in the celebrations as well, because you can see some big moments in those sometimes, can't you? But otherwise, another one to sort of take a little bit of a step backwards, Nelson Oliveira. Friday's press conference was the first opportunity you'd had to ask Daniel about the situation, wasn't it, Pad? And basically, things haven't moved on at all.
Well, no, and even that decision, you know, at no point from 3 o'clock onwards was Nelson Oliveira mentioned. I didn't see any mention of him. Now, if that result had gone the other way and, you know, they hadn't scored, then you can guarantee Nelson Oliveira would have been brought up again. So, again, another thing that went right for Farker over that weekend, because that does feel like a big call. I mean, basically, just to reiterate, anybody who's not seen the quotes or the video, no change in his situation, despite the fact that certainly the European market is now closed. He's not getting to move into Europe until January and the market reopening again. So you would think, and we discussed this at length on various platforms over the Pinkin.com family, that you need maybe to review the original decision, which was it's in both parties' interest to have a part in other ways. But Farker was adamant the situation hasn't changed as far as he's concerned. It's still going to be Pukki, Rhodes, Srebeni. There is three. While they're still A, fit and performing, then Oliveira will be nowhere near it, won't even be in match day squads. But I mean, he did make the caveat that, and we saw anybody who was at the open training session over the international break at Carrow Road, which Oliveira was part of, no issues at all in terms of professionalism. He's training, he's keeping his head down, so there's not a negative force there in the dressing room. But just in terms of, will he be in a match day squad anytime soon? No.
Does that approach concern you at all, Pete? Would you have preferred to have sort of seen a, you know, Daniel turn up on Friday saying, yeah, we've had a big chat, we're going to integrate him again, we're going to try and get Nelson back involved? Or are you happy to sort of stay in Daniel's corner on this one?
I do find it a bit unusual that he's been completely frozen out, but it's nice that we've got the honesty there from Farker. It's, I guess, like he says, he's picked his three. Mm. Oliveira didn't exactly have a brilliant season last time, and his sort of goals to games ratio was fairly horrendous. But is there a bit more to it than that? That it's just the decision is made. He's staying at the club because we can't offload him. But he's just not even figure in the cup games.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. I mean, I can see, and we'll never know the conversations they've had behind closed doors and whether they've you know, too much has been said between them over the years, but or over the months. But you know, it is about being professional at the end of the day. Nelson's going to kick on with his career at some point, but, you know, if you got to back one of the two, I would back Daniel, because Nelson, frankly, I'll always look back on that day at Craven Cottage when he completely disrespected the guy in his first day in the job, completely unnecessarily, completely needlessly, after he'd scored an important goal when he should have been going and giving the guy a hug and saying, come on, let's do this. Instead, he, you know, holds up his shirt. I think Daniel's mind was probably made up that day, sadly, but
there's no way back for either of them, is there? It's just a case of who's going to buy him. When's his contract up?
2020. Still plenty of time left on that. So not going to be a quick resolution on it, but we'll see. You never know. He might be on the bench at Wickham or something. And that segues nicely into three successive away games. Reading Wednesday night, QPR Saturday, which is a 5:30 kickoff because it's on Sky, and then Wickham in the third round of the Carabao Cup on Tuesday, when I'd imagine we'll see a totally rotated team again, as we've seen, Cardiff and against Stevenage. So, Reading firstly, Pad, they won 3-2 at Preston at the weekend and picked up a little bit. How do you see this one as we head down to Berkshire?
What's that table saying? How many points have they got?
They are still in the bottom three. They've got 5 points, so it's only three less than Norwich. I mean, Paul Clement was certainly wobbling, but a big result for them.
I mean, my eye is drawn to the goals against column. Obviously, Norwich have not covered themselves in glory on that one, but given that you hope the curve is turning the other way from defensively, whereas they've conceded only one less. So, you know, you think what you saw on Saturday against Middlesbrough, if they go with that approach again, really, they could certainly get a positive result, and you'd hope they can actually get a win. And if they get a win, then they'll really bounce into QPR at the weekend. Did they win as well at the weekend?
Yeah, they won 2-1 at Bolton.
Yeah, which is an excellent result in the context of, you know, a scrap at the bottom. So, yeah, by no stretch, and these will be different games in terms of the mentality and maybe even the expectation. You know, Farker won't be able to sit down when he speaks to us on Tuesday afternoon at Colney and say, these are the big, big favourites and we'll be rebellious and we'll have to be brave, but we're the underdogs. That's not going to wash with Reading and Wigan and QPR. So the mindset will be different. Another test for the, for those young players and one or two of the experienced lads as well, because it's not enough just to do it down here when, you know, nobody really expects anything. As Pete said right at the outset, you know, no, even the most optimistic Norwich fan thought Saturday against Middlesbrough was probably beyond them. Completely turn the tables, that's fine, but in isolation, it's not going to get them anywhere up the table if they then go to Reading and QPR and come back with no points. So, an interesting one. Certainly, they're capable of getting positive results, but it'll be as much about the mindset going there than, you know, the performance level, I think. You know, if they go there and think, well, we don't need to do the things we did that got success against Middlesbrough, they'll come unstuck because that's the Championship.
Yeah, I think we know we can expect a different approach from a Paul Clement team to Tony Pulis. They're not going to set up and be direct. They're going to try and play a bit of possession football as well. And if Norwich's tails are up at the moment as much as we hope, then that might just, you know, just work. If I think we all know that if Norwich click and the ability in this team is fulfilled, then they are going to be a good match for anyone in the league. And now fans have seen tangible evidence of that against Middlesbrough. There's hopefully that belief can grow. But yeah, I would say that you go into this week for these two league games, and if you can get 4 points, then I think everyone will be happy, won't they, Pete?
Yeah, it's a real opportunity, isn't it? To at least, well, definitely not lose, but I mean, I don't think our recent record at QPR is anything to shout about.
That 4-1 on Easter Monday was horrible. I mean,
yeah, both teams are below us. Both shipping goals, aren't they?
So. They are. I mean, QPR have picked up quite well, actually. I mean, they had a disastrous start, didn't they? They lost 7-0.
Yeah, 7-0
to West Brom. Yeah. And then they made some late deadline signings, didn't they? They brought in Naki Wells from Burnley and Toma Hamid from Brighton to give them a bit of attacking power, and that seems to have worked. I think they're unbeaten in 3 off the top of my head, that is, in the league, because they drew with Birmingham ahead of the break, they beat someone as well, and they also beat someone in the cup, I think. So Steve McLaren was becoming a bit of a joke figure quite quickly, wasn't he? And they've actually picked up quite well. So it's, you know, there's no way this is going to be an easy week. There's no way, if any Norwich fan thinks, oh yeah, Reading QPR are going to go do that, 6 points, it's all going to be fine, it's not going to be as straightforward as that, because that is not the Championship, is it, Pat?
No, absolutely not. And as you say, you know, McLaren is, he might not be the best manager and all, but his reputation, certainly for United and Derby days, was as a coach. And if he's got one or two players you name there now at his disposal, then they'll be organised and they'll be difficult to beat. And yeah, Reading, as much as Norwich have had a fill-up from the weekend result, well, going to Preston, we know an Alex Neil team don't give anything away lightly, so that's an excellent result for them. So, but I just think the time has come, really, you know, that Norwich have to back their own ability as they did on Saturday, and because it feels a fresh, youthful core to this team now, I don't think they'll go there and be played within themselves and go into their shells. I think they will look to be on the front foot against both those clubs, and as I say, if they can maintain what they're offering in the final third now and be as solid defensively, then 4 points out of 6 is not beyond them, and then we could, you know, really roll into Wickham in the cup to a lesser extent, Wigan, and then that next international break then is probably going to come too soon for them, sadly.
Yeah, 7 points from 9, if you get that from these next 3 games, and they're going to be moving very nice. I mean, Madesi Stadium, Norwich won there last year, didn't they? James Maddison, wonderful free kick and a Cameron Jerome goal, so Daniel Farke knows how to win there, and I'd imagine that's going to be a bit more of an uneasy ground, because they've, you know, they were playoff finalists in what would that have been, 2016? And then it went wrong very under Yap Stam, didn't it? And they got rid of him, and it's not really happened for Clement. So we'll see what sort of atmosphere awaits when we get there. But just finally, Pete, I mean, in terms of rotation, for instance, someone like Pukki, you know, he's playing a lot of football, isn't he? He did look a bit like he was running on empty towards the end. I mean, you've got to start him at the moment. You can't break his momentum. But clearly the squad is going to be needed. That game on Saturday was the first of 7 games in 3 weeks. There's going to be a need for rotation, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, he's not fresh, is he? Especially after the national games as well. But like I said, he's got to start. He won't last the game. Say this every week with Tetti, don't we? He has to be managed. 2 games a week has always been too much for him. But then you just bring in Tribal, don't you? Yeah. And Vrančić is back. He had the opportunity on Saturday, but sadly he has 0 pace. He's never going to do anything with it. but yeah, they've got players coming back. They've got that rotation. You would expect Wickham, there'd be a few. I know he likes to play a fairly strong side, but you think one or two of the youngsters would get in for that. But this is the Championship, isn't it? I mean, midweek game, Saturday game. And then I suppose you boys might as well stay down in London for those three.
Yeah, we just need a West London pad, don't we, for a little while.
Yeah. I don't think we've got one, Pete.
We'll have to see if the company will shell out, but I think I know the answer. Right, thanks very much, chaps. I think that'll do us for today. Thanks for listening, as always. Me, Michael and Paddy will be at the Medeski on Wednesday night in Loftus Road on Saturday, so you can follow all the usual coverage at pinken.com, as well as on Twitter and on Facebook. We'll be back with a pod every Monday, as usual, so make sure you get in touch and get involved, as this is your podcast as much as it is ours.